This is Audible.
Brilliance Audio presents The Perfect Child by Lucinda Barry. Performed by Christine Williams, Aaron Bennett, and Dan John Miller. Case number 5243. Interview, Piper Goldstein.
Is this your first homicide case? He asked in a clipped voice, all business. His chest bulged with muscles underneath his blue-collared shirt.
No matter how many times I was questioned by the police, it never got easier. My nerves jumped into high gear automatically. They always made me feel like I was lying, even when I was telling the truth. I cleared my throat. I've been on other cases. I wished I lived in a world where I didn't know violence intimately, but I'd seen more than my fair share, given the work I did. I'd just never expected the Bowers to be involved in anything so awful.
How did you find out there'd been a break in the case?
I glanced at the two-way mirror behind us.
Even though we were the only two in the room, I knew we weren't alone.
Claire told me.
He raised his eyebrows. Claire?
My co-worker, I responded quickly. It was hard to believe it had been less than an hour since Claire had walked into my office. We were always the first ones in the morning, and I'd assumed she was stopping by to ask how my date had gone the night before, since she got more excited about them than I did. She had been married for 20 years and liked to live vicariously through me, but her married life must have been pretty boring for her to get so excited about mine. My dating life was nothing to get worked up about. The officer's eyes drilled holes into me. He wanted more from me, but I didn't want to say too much. He rested his elbows on the table and leaned forward.
What did she say when she told you?
He had to be new, because I'd never seen him before. In a town as small as Clarksville, even the police had familiar faces. He'd told me his name when he'd come into the waiting room. But my head had been swimming with shock, and it had never registered. I shrugged, anxiously twisting my hands underneath the table. She didn't say much, but I could tell something was wrong as soon as she came into my office. I had just logged onto my computer and had been organizing my files for the day when Claire had stuck her head through my door before I'd even finished my first cup of coffee.
"Geez, girl, why don't you just go on my dates for me?" I had joked.
But my joke had fallen flat when I'd seen the look on her face. All semblance of playfulness had been gone, replaced with her most serious expression. All of us had it. The face we wore when the case was so horrible we knew it would keep us up at night and infiltrate our dreams after we finally found a way to fall asleep. The cases that made the social workers with kids hold them tighter.
So you just knew?
His tone suggested he wasn't sure if he believed me. I hated when we weren't on the same team. You couldn't be on the other side of the law and not feel like a criminal. It was impossible. I knew something serious had happened, but I didn't have any idea what it was or who was involved. I glanced down at my phone for the third time, willing it to vibrate. It wasn't like I was under arrest. I could leave any time I wanted. But there was no way to leave without looking like I was hiding something.
What did you think when you found out it was the Bauer family?
I swallowed past the emotions pushing their way up my throat. I hoped that it would finally provide them with some answers. They're like family to me. He glanced down at the open file spread out before him.
It says here that you were the original social worker assigned to the case?
I nodded. Then quickly remembered I was being recorded. Yes.
What was that like?
How could I describe what the last 2 years had been like? It was the most complicated case of my career and had ended with the worst possible outcome. I'd doubted myself at so many different points, wondering if I'd made the right decisions for everyone involved. What if I'd been wrong? What if I was partially responsible for all this? I took a deep breath, trying to clear my thoughts.
You couldn't have asked for a better home for Janie.
I've been in children's services for over 20 years, and there are plenty of bad foster homes. A lot of foster parents just do it for the money, so they run their families like businesses. But the Bowers were one of the good ones. All they wanted to do was help. My eyes welled with tears, and I couldn't hold them back, even though I tried. I wiped them away quickly, embarrassed to look so soft in front of him. I'm sorry. This is all just happening so fast. I understand, he said, but I knew he didn't. In all my years, I'd never seen a cop cry. He waited a few beats before continuing. Would it be easier for you if we started at the beginning? It didn't matter where we started. Nothing about this was going to be easy.
One. Hannah Bauer. I wouldn't let that fly. I'd ignore him until he apologized, Aubrey said in the righteous, uncompromising way all unmarried people do, without even looking up from her phone. I forgot she was there half the time because her eyes were glued to her phone from the moment we all walked into the hospital break room, her fingers gliding across the screen with manic speed. Stephanie and I rolled our eyes at the same time. Stephanie had just spent the last 10 minutes unloading her pent-up frustrations with her husband, things ranging from leaving his dirty socks all over the house and forgetting to take out the trash, to not cleaning up his wiry black hairs in the sink after he shaved. She'd called him out on it, which had led to the age-old argument of her being a nag and him not carrying his weight in household responsibilities that anyone who'd been married for over a decade knew well. Their argument had ended in a major blowout. He's so manipulative when he's angry. He leads me on these wild trails, trying to put all this stuff back on me, and before you know it, I'm the one apologizing. I fall for it every time. It drives me crazy, Stephanie continued, shoveling bites of reheated pasta in her mouth while she talked. See, that's what I was saying last night. We need a girls' weekend. It's been way too long, I said. Last time, we'd checked ourselves into the Four Seasons for the weekend and done nothing but drink wine next to the pool and bliss out in the spa. I loved their papaya facial peels and was long overdue for one.
Totally. Just say when, Stephanie said.
One of our other co-workers, Carl, stuck his head in the door. We need you guys. We jumped into action, and within seconds, we'd picked up our mess and were squirting antibacterial foam on our hands as we walked out the door. The nurse's station buzzed with activity and anticipation, everyone on heightened alert. Stephanie shifted into nurse manager mode and made a beeline for Dr. Hall. The two of them ran the emergency department like a well-oiled machine. I leaned into Carl. What happened? He shrugged. Not sure. Only know that it's a lost kid or something, and she's in really bad shape. Ambulance is bringing her in with a police escort. My stomach churned. Treating sick kids was one thing. Treating hurt ones was another, and police presence always signaled serious injury. It was the part of my job that had never gotten easier. I glanced at the board, seeing how many of my assigned rooms were open, and breathed a sigh of relief when I saw that all my beds were full. The call button on bed 8 blinked, and I headed in to see what Eloise wanted. She was one of our frequent flyers. She was a widow and often came into the emergency room because she was lonely. There was never anything seriously wrong with her. She was one of the healthiest 81-year-olds that I worked with, but she came in every few weeks convinced that she was dying. This time, she complained of throbbing leg pain and was terrified she had a blood clot. She smiled up at me from bed, wrinkles moving underneath her eyes. She motioned for me to come closer. I leaned in to give her the customary hug she'd grown to expect from me. The familiar scent of vanilla musk and baby powder filled my nose.
She squeezed me tightly before pulling away to arm's length while still holding onto my forearm. "Hi, dear. I don't mean to keep bothering you, but do we have any of my results back?" I shook my head and moved above her bed to adjust the drip on her IV. "We're still waiting to get them sent down from the ultrasound tech. Sorry. It's probably going to be a few more minutes because we're pretty slammed tonight." As if on cue, the sound of police scanners interrupted our conversation. Eloise peeked around her curtain, trying to catch a glimpse of the police. "What's going on out there?" I smiled. "You know I can't tell you that." She leaned forward, trying to get a better view. "There are just so many officers. Why are there so many? Am I in danger?" "You're fine. I'd never let anything bad happen to you." I patted the top of her hand. I could tell by the doughy feel of her skin that she was dehydrated again. "And you, Miss Thing," I shook my finger at her playfully, "need to drink more during the day. How many times have I told you that?" She hung her head but couldn't hide the smile tugging at the corners of her lips. I checked her vitals, noting them in her chart. "I'll keep my eye on your reports and let you know as soon as I know anything. Deal?"
"Deal."
She crossed her arms on her chest, settling in comfortably. She closed her eyes, and some of the lines in her face relaxed. She had told me once that she didn't sleep well by herself and spent hours each night terrified of someone breaking into her house while she slept. It was no surprise that her hospital visits were only at night. She didn't even open her eyes as she spoke.
"And see if you can find out anything about what's going on with all the police officers."
"I will," I promised, as I headed out to check on my other patients, knowing I wouldn't be able to tell her even if I did. The night grew busy as it wore on, and I didn't get a chance to sit down until after 4 o'clock. I poured myself a cup of coffee and logged on to the computer, eager to get started on my notes while I had a brief reprieve. Stephanie grabbed a chair and slid down next to me.
"Did you hear anything about what happened?" she asked.
I'd forgotten all about the officers earlier. I shook my head. "I haven't had time to even breathe. We ended up doing a lumbar puncture on bed 6. I pulled up my first patient and scrolled through their blood type results, searching for the one I needed in my report. What did I miss?
"The police brought in an abandoned toddler. She's pretty beat up. They found her wandering around a parking lot. She was only wearing a diaper and some kind of weird collar thing around her neck. How sad is that?"
She talked fast, eager to get out the story before she got called to the next crisis.
"She wouldn't let the police anywhere near her. It took 3 officers to coax her into the car. She's filthy, has blood all over her hands and arms, but we can't clean her until they've gathered all the evidence that might be on her. They have no idea who she is or where she's from."
The angry knot of unfairness lodged in my stomach. Why did the universe allow people who hurt kids to have them? Why couldn't it give them to people like me, who wanted them? My husband, Christopher, and I had tried to get pregnant for years, but it was one disappointment followed by another. We got a second opinion after our doctor diagnosed me with an inhospitable uterus, but he agreed with the first doctor. Birthing a child of my own was impossible. I swallowed down the bitterness. Some days it was better than others. Today wasn't one of those days. "Do they have any leads on her parents?" I asked.
"Nope, not a thing. They think either she walked over there from the trailer park across the street, or she was dropped there by someone."
She wrinkled her face in disgust.
"She's so skinny. Looks like she hasn't eaten in days.
Poor thing. Hopefully they'll find her parents, and it'll turn out to be some weird accident or misunderstanding." Stephanie raised her eyebrows.
"Misunderstanding? What kind of misunderstanding leads to your toddler being lost in a parking lot wearing only a diaper? And blood. Did you forget that part?" Someone's got to be an optimist.
I wished I were as optimistic as I pretended. I used to be. Not anymore.
Stephanie burst out laughing and squeezed my arm.
That's what I love about you, she said,
before hurrying off. Christopher was waiting for me with a cup of chamomile tea when I got home. He held his cup of morning coffee in one hand and my favorite mug in the other, the one that said Pug Life on the front, even though I'd never owned a dog. I'd been working swing shift overnights for the last 2 years, and he worked days unless there was an emergency, so we were on opposite schedules, but it worked for us. It gave us an opportunity to miss each other. And sometimes you needed that in a relationship, even when you loved each other as much as we did. I grabbed the mug from his hands while I slipped off my shoes and followed him into the living room. I plopped down on the sofa beside him and sank into it, the down feathers contouring around my body. It was the piece of furniture we'd fought over the most when we had decorated the house shortly after we'd bought it. The living room was one of the first rooms you saw when you came inside, and he had thought we should have a formal couch so that it would look pristine and nice. But our house was too small to have another main living area, so I'd known we'd spend all our time there and wanted it to be comfortable. In the end, I had won, and he'd said on more than one occasion that he was glad I had, because he couldn't imagine coming home to a stiff couch. He sat on the other end, and I stretched my feet onto his lap. He peeled off my socks and started massaging my feet. When I'd first told my sister about his foot rubs after work, she'd been sure it was only because we were newlyweds, but he was still doing it after all these years. If he was there at the end of my shift, he rubbed my feet. Period. It didn't matter if he'd been in surgery for 12 hours.
Well?
He raised his eyebrows, questioning. You couldn't practice medicine and not be affected by it. Over the years, we'd grown into each other's therapists. We understood what it was like to be responsible for other people's lives in a way nobody outside the profession could. Eloise was in again tonight.
What was it this time?
Blood clot.
And?
Negative. He smiled. His dark hair was combed straight back, a few strands stretched flat over a thinning spot in the back. He was self-conscious about his hair loss, but I didn't care. I loved the weathered look, and as far as I was concerned, he grew more handsome with age. Men were lucky that way. Even his wrinkles were cute. "What's your day look like today?" I asked.
"Two surgeries, three consults."
Christopher was an orthopedic surgeon at Northfield Memorial, the same hospital where I worked. Northfield was the largest regional hospital in Ohio, and we'd met in the cafeteria while he was a first-year medical student back when he used to work all day and study all night. He'd been so focused and goal-driven that he almost hadn't noticed me, but his work ethic had paid off. It had landed him a residency followed by a specialty placement. "Anything interesting?" I asked. He shook his head.
"Oh, before I forget to tell you, make sure you read the email from Bianella. She wants us to go to a seminar next weekend on international adoption. There's supposed to be a panel of parents talking about some of the hidden challenges in international adoptions," he said.
Bianella was our adoption specialist. We had connected with her after our fertility doctor had sat us down and explained the grim statistics for the final time. Christopher and I had always wanted kids, so adoption was a logical choice for us, and we'd dived into researching facilities immediately, not wanting to waste any more time than we already had. I had been almost 40 at the time, and neither of us had wanted to be older parents. I had thought adopting a child would be easy in the same way I had thought getting pregnant would be easy when I'd first started. We'd already had one failed adoption, and it had hurt as bad as any miscarriage. I'm still on the fence about going the international route, I said.
I know. Me too. Just read it, and let me know what you think.
Christopher slid my legs off his lap.
I've got to get getting.
He headed to the kitchen to put his mug in the dishwasher, and I was walking toward the hallway leading to the bedroom when I suddenly remembered.
Hey, Christopher, I called out.
What?
I did forget to tell you one thing that happened tonight.
I paused to make sure I had his attention again.
The police brought in an abandoned toddler.
2. Christopher Bauer. I'd just gotten back to my office after a grueling 6-hour reconstructive hand surgery that had turned out to be more complicated than we'd expected. I was making a cup of coffee when Dan, the chief of surgery, walked in looking upset. Can I talk to you? He asked, shutting the door behind him. You want to sit? I pointed to the chair in front of my desk. We rarely had closed-door meetings, so it had to be serious. He shook his head, running his hands through his dark hair. His forehead was lined with stress. What the hell is wrong with people? Really, how can they be such monsters? He paced across my office as he spoke. We'd worked together for years, and I'd never seen him so unnerved. Are you sure you don't want to sit down? No, no, I'm good. What I really want is a drink. He laughed bitterly. A toddler girl was brought into the ER last night, and her case is awful. I've never seen anything like it. Never. He wrestled with his emotions, probably thinking of his own 3 daughters, whose pictures lined the desk in his office. I can't imagine someone doing that to a child. I just can't. Just what are we talking about here? I asked, my curiosity getting the best of me. You might want to be the one to sit down, he said, only half joking. She was brought in by the police and child services. Apparently, she was found in a parking lot over on the west side down by Park Station. You know which one I'm talking about? I nodded. Everyone knew Park Station and the trailer parks that lined the streets behind it. It was where the town's meth habit grew and flourished. You only went to that part of town for one thing. Her entire body is covered in old scars and bruises. She must have been abused for a long time. He struggled to gain his composure. She's severely malnourished and dehydrated, so she looks like those starving orphans you see on TV, you know the ones I'm talking about? He didn't wait for me to respond before continuing. They're weird rashes on her legs, like she might have some kind of septic infection. Her x-rays show multiple fractures all over her body. Some of them are old, others are relatively new. She's probably never seen a doctor, so who knows what we'll find once we start looking. He cleared his throat, cleared it again, shifting into project management mode. There's going to be a huge team on this one, and we need all of our best people on it, which is why I want you to take her case. We're going to convene first thing tomorrow morning, so I need you to cancel your morning. Okay, sure. I can have Alexis rearrange things. I pulled out my phone and quickly tapped out an email to my receptionist before slipping it back in my pocket. Come on, let's go. Dan headed toward the door, and I followed him out. He talked as we walked. This is going to be a complete media circus as soon as the word gets out. So far, nothing has leaked. We're trying to protect her privacy for as long as possible, but seriously, it's only a matter of time before they get wind of it. You understand the limits of confidentiality on this one, right? Of course. I nodded, even though I'd never had any sort of high-profile case before. We didn't get high-profile cases in a town of our size, and most of the kids I worked with were victims of car accidents or sports injuries. I was excited about being involved in something so unusual, but I couldn't admit that. We stepped into the elevator at the end of the hallway. It was packed with people, so we stopped talking as we rode to the 3rd floor. Dan held the door open and motioned for me to step out. "What's she doing down here?" I asked. The third floor was the neuroscience ward, where stroke and heart attack patients stayed. "No one will think to look for her here," he said.
"You mean the media?"
"We're not too worried about the media. They're easy to keep out. They're trying to keep her safe just in case whoever did this to her comes looking for her. They don't know who hurt her or if she's still in danger. They don't even know who she is yet. She said her name is Janie, but who knows? She could have just made up the name. She might have even been kidnapped. We'll know more about her as the case unfolds."
Dan nodded to the nurses scurrying around the station as we walked by. Two uniformed officers stood outside a door in the middle of the hallway. Dan strode up to them and flashed his hospital ID. I did the same. He turned to look at me before opening the door.
"Prepare yourself," he said.
He pushed through the door, and a wave of sadness washed over me as I stared at a small child lying on the bed. Nothing could have prepared me for her. Dan had said she was a toddler, but the child on the bed looked like she was barely over a year old. Her arms and legs were frail, like they wouldn't be able to support her if she stood. Her stomach was distended, and her head was massive in proportion to her tiny body and too big for her fragile frame to hold. She was nearly bald. There were only short tufts of blonde where hair should have been. She turned to look at us with the palest blue eyes I'd ever seen.
"Hiya."
Her lips spread into a shy smile, revealing a rotten tooth in the front.
"Hi, Janie."
Dan walked over to her bed and bent down to get closer to her. She reached her arms up.
"Hug?"
He leaned over and wrapped his arms around her delicately, afraid to hurt her. She clung to his lab coat. Dan looked uncomfortable.
"I like your smell,"
she said in a small voice, barely above a whisper. She refused to let go, so he turned to look at me, motioning me over. I stepped around one of the nurses and into her view.
"Hi, Janie. My name's Christopher. I'm going to be one of your doctors," I said, choosing my words carefully. "I'm going to help take care of you."
She let go of Dan and reached out to grab my hand. Her nails were long, caked with dirt. Her fingers were so bent they couldn't coil naturally around mine.
"Hi,"
she said hesitantly.
"Are you going to fix me?"
I nodded.
"I am, sweetheart. I promise."
3. Hannah Bauer. I was in the kitchen packing my lunch for my shift when the front door opened, signaling Christopher's arrival.
"Hey, honey, I'm in here. I still haven't finished getting my stuff ready for tonight. I got caught up in some stupid documentary."
He came up behind me and wrapped his arms around me. He kissed the top of my head and let out a deep sigh. I dried my hands on the towel next to the sink and turned around. Sadness clouded his face. "Did you lose a patient?" I asked. He rarely lost patients, but sometimes it happened when they had other complications. He shook his head. "I met the abandoned girl."
"You did?"
I motioned for him to sit down at the table.
"That poor little girl. She's so beat up and starved."
His voice caught in his throat. "People treat their pets better than she was treated."
"It's that bad, huh?" I asked.
He nodded. I prepared a tumbler full of his favorite scotch and took the seat across from him. He took a small sip, then fingered the top of the glass as he stared out the window above the sink. I reached across the table and took his hand in mine, rubbing the top of his palm with my thumb. I understood his sensitivity toward children. Neither of us had had it when we first married, but years of infertility problems had made us emotional about almost everything involving kids, especially young ones.
"Her name is Janie, and she's adorable. She has these massive, pale blue eyes that blow you away."
He took another drink.
"I reviewed her notes before I left, and she's been starved for so long, her body started eating itself.
She has so many old breaks that went untreated and never healed right, so some of the bones fused together. There wasn't a part of her that went untouched. His eyes flashed with anger. Who would do such a thing? We both knew the answer to his question. A monster. It went without saying. She's going to need surgery on her elbow. It was a complicated break and healed into almost a 90-degree angle because it was never set properly. Lots of her bones have fused together from other untreated breaks and injuries. Dan and I are coming up with a game plan first thing tomorrow morning.
You've got this, I said.
We sat in silence, enjoying our brief time together before I had to leave for my shift. By the way, I read through all the information Bianella sent us about that seminar you told me about. I even watched the videos. I think we should go, I said after a few more minutes had passed.
Really?
I nodded. No matter which direction we go, there's going to be challenges, and we're going to need the advice of other people who've done it before. Just think how helpful our resolve meetings have been. After our third round of failed IVF, our doctor had suggested attending a support group for other parents going through similar challenges. Nobody understood the dramatic highs and crushing lows of infertility unless they'd been through it too. Christopher had balked at the idea at first because he hadn't liked the thought of bearing our souls in a room full of strangers, but he'd gotten used to it. A few of the couples had grown to be some of our closest friends, and we went out for dinner and drinks on a regular basis.
"Do you want me to sign us up, or are you going to do it?" he asked.
"I can do it on my break tonight. Why don't you just relax and prepare for tomorrow?"
"Janie isn't in the ER anymore," he said, reading my mind before I could ask the question.
I breathed a sigh of relief.
"They moved her to the third floor. She's tucked in with all the geriatric patients to keep her safe."
I raised my eyebrows. "Do they really think someone is going to come looking for her?"
He shook his head. "I think they're just being extra cautious. I can't imagine that someone who dropped their kid off in a parking lot in the middle of the night would show up to claim her later. But you never know."
Case number 5243. Interview. Piper Goldstein. "When did you first meet Janie?" The first officer had been joined by a former detective turned private investigator who'd introduced himself as Ron with a firm handshake. He tried to play himself off as a fellow cop, but his civilian clothes were a dead giveaway. I had no idea why he was so critical to the case. "On her third day in the hospital." "Is that how long it usually takes for a social worker to meet their client? I thought social workers were required to speak with the victim at least 24 hours after the incident." I hated when they asked me questions that they already knew the answers to. "They are, but she wasn't stable enough for me to see her." The bad fluorescent lighting was starting to give me a headache. I rubbed my temples, trying to stave it off for as long as possible. "She was that sick?" the officer Luke asked. Ron had clued me into his name. They both wore the same close-cropped haircut. I shook my head. "Not sick. Starved. Did you know you can't just feed a starving person or you can actually kill them?" I didn't wait for an answer. "I had no idea that could happen. She went into cardiac arrest a few hours after being admitted because they fed her too much. It took 2 days to stabilize her, so I didn't get a chance to meet her until she'd been there for almost 3 days." "What did you think about her when you met?" "She was a complete surprise," I said. "How so?" Luke cocked his head to the side, eyeing me quizzically. "I didn't know how to explain, Janie. It was difficult to put into words unless you'd been there at the time and seen how she looked. Thankfully, they'd seen some of the crime scene photos, so the responsibility of a perfect description didn't fall on my shoulders. I'd expected to find a really frightened and traumatized girl, but Janie was talking and smiling with her nurses when I walked into the room. Her room had been an explosion of color that day, filled with balloons and stuffed animals donated by the hospital staff. Everyone who had met her had brought something with them, and I was no different. I'd come with a small teddy bear holding a heart in its paws. She'd sat in the center of the room, perched on her bed, while the nurses took turns trying to coax smiles out of her. She wasn't incapacitated with fear like I'd expected. People had made her sound like she was some kind of feral child, but she wasn't. I'd worked hard at hiding my shock over her emaciated figure. The outline of her skull had been clear underneath her pale skin, so translucent that purple veins showed through. Her cheekbones had jutted out, and her pale blue eyes had bulged out of her sunken sockets. Ron nodded at me, signaling me to continue, but it was hard to just talk freely without them asking me questions. I knew what was expected of me with their questions. Talking freely and open-endedly could result in me saying something I wasn't supposed to. Nerves twisted my stomach. It was hard to connect with her at first, but it's always like that. Nobody likes social workers, even the people we're trying to help. I wanted to talk to her alone, but she looked terrified when I asked the nurses to leave, so I let them stay, I said. We still didn't know the circumstances of her case. Didn't have any clue about her parents or guardian or who was responsible for her and if they'd been the ones to hurt her. The police were interviewing all of the people in the trailer park behind the store for potential leads, but they hadn't gotten anywhere yet. As far as I knew, anyway. The police aren't always the best at letting me know what they know. I stopped short, realizing what I'd said. I'm sorry, I just... Ron dismissed it, waving me off. I get it. No need to apologize. He looked at Luke pointedly. We could all do a better job of working as a team. He held his gaze before looking away and directing his attention back at me. Did you have any concerns about her mother? Was anyone worried she might be in danger? I hung my head, embarrassed. I know we're always supposed to keep an open mind and not jump to any conclusions until we have all the facts about the case, but everyone assumed Janie's parents were the ones who hurt her. Or some really sick psycho. It never crossed anyone's mind that someone else might be in trouble. I wished it would have. Maybe then things would have ended differently.
4. Christopher Bauer. I meet with Janie for her surgery consult on Tuesday, and I was wondering if you'd come with me to help make her feel comfortable. I visited with all my patients before surgery, if possible. I liked us to know each other because surgery went better when we had a connection. It wasn't the first time I'd asked Hannah to help me with a patient. Sometimes I came across too clinical when I was nervous, and she was the kind of person who put people at ease without even trying. She shook her head. You know I can't do that. Janie's presence at the hospital hadn't stayed a secret for long. As soon as the police had started asking questions around town, her case had spread like wildfire, and everyone was obsessed with finding out the story about the abandoned girl. Police stood guard 24/7 at her hospital door, and no one was allowed to see her unless they were on a special clearance list. It was highly unlikely anyone would try to sneak in to see her, but everyone was protective of her privacy and care. I got you added to her list, I said. Really? Stephanie told me they were being super strict about it. They always make exceptions when I tell them I need the most talented nurse in the world by my side. I winked at her. She rolled her eyes. I'm trying to stay as far away from that one as possible. You already know that. She wasn't the only one. There were interns and residents who excused themselves from rounds during Janie's updates. Child abuse was horrible, and some people couldn't handle dealing with it, but Hannah had never been one of those people, at least not until recently. Pretty please... I begged, even though I knew how unlikely she was to change her mind once it was made up. It makes me too sad. I'll be an emotional wreck, and we both know that won't be helpful to anyone, she said, shaking her head.
I didn't press her further and met with Janie by myself on Tuesday. She was huddled against the wall behind her bed when I arrived. She gained weight every day, but still looked so small. She wrapped her arms around her legs and pulled them up to her chest, glaring at the nurse who was busy entering notes into the computer next to her bed, tapping on the keys angrily. What could have happened to make her so angry? The tension in the room was thick. I glanced back and forth between the two, wishing I'd come at a better time. I stepped closer to Janie's bed, but not too close, as I wanted to respect her space. I cleared my throat. Hi, Janie. I'm Dr. Christopher, but you can call me Dr. Chris if you want. Do you remember me? She nodded without looking at me, her gaze fixed on the nurse. The nurse pushed the computer aside. Janie is having a difficult time right now because dinner time is over, and she doesn't like when dinner time ends. I bristled at one of my biggest pet peeves, talking about patients in third person while they were in the room with you.
I'm still hungry, Janie said.
Her lower lip quivered. I reached into my lab coat pockets, feeling for the protein bar I'd nibbled on earlier. I held it out for the nurse to see.
Can she have this? It's chocolate chip.
The nurse glared at me.
She's on an eating schedule for a reason.
That's why I asked. I was hoping she might be able to have a tiny piece. She rolled her eyes.
Really? A protein bar?
She turned on her heel and stomped out. Hannah never would have acted that way. I didn't think that just because she was my wife. I knew a good nurse when I saw one, and I'd seen Hannah in action numerous times over the years. She was one of the good ones, going the extra mile, cleaning up food trays that were the nutrition staff's responsibility, staying with patients to talk when her job was done, helping relatives after they'd heard terrible news, and doing the things everyone else avoided, like cleaning up vomit. I put the bar back in my pocket. I'd been pretty sure it wouldn't be on her list of acceptable foods, but it had been worth a try.
Sorry, hon.
I smiled down at her, hoping she could tell I was sincere. I wanted to come see you so that we could talk about what's going to happen tomorrow. She stared up at me. I couldn't tell if she was hanging on my every word or didn't understand what I was saying.
Do you remember what you and Dr. Dan talked about?
Yes. Her voice was quiet, unsure.
Well, I am the doctor who's going to fix your bones. Tomorrow Nurse Ellie is going to wake you up very early. You're still going to be sleepy when they bring you to me. Then one of my doctor friends is going to make you go back to sleep and have wonderful dreams about all your favorite things. I'm going to fix all your bones while you sleep.
It was a complicated surgery. Multiple bone grafts were never easy. But I planned on doing everything within my power to make sure I fixed it all, so she didn't need additional surgeries.
Will it hurt?
She asked, her lower lip trembling again. I shook my head and pointed to a spot on the bed next to her.
Can I sit here?
She nodded. I perched on the edge. Surgery is not going to hurt, because you will be asleep the whole time. But I'm not going to lie. Your arm will hurt when you wake up. I'm sorry, sweetie. I wish there was a way we could do it without any pain. I would have given anything not to hurt her any more than she'd already been hurt. I didn't like having to break the bones of a child who was already so broken, but we didn't have any other choice if she was going to use her arm. A lone tear slid down her cheek. I reached out and wiped it with my thumb. I wanted to pull her onto my lap and hold her, but was worried it might scare her.
Hey now, it's okay, sweetheart. You're going to be okay. Promise?
I'm going to make sure of it. We're going to get you magic medicine, and it'll help your pain feel so much better. Do you know what color the magic medicine is? She looked at me wide-eyed and curious, waiting.
It's going to be red. Do you like the color red?
She shook her head. I faked surprise.
You don't? How can you not like red?
I like purple, she said.
I scratched my chin, pretending to think. I can't do anything about the magic medicine. It has to stay red, but I'll tell you what. Why don't we make your cast purple? Would you like that?
Purple?
she asked again, like it was too good to be true.
Yep, and I will come check on you every day after your surgery to make sure you're getting better.
She squealed, beaming. She crawled toward me, and I opened my arms so she could crawl onto my lap. She cuddled up against me. I wrapped my arms around her tiny frame. I'd never felt so large. I didn't want to move too much because I was afraid of accidentally hurting her. She was as delicate as any newborn I'd ever held. I was just as nervous to perform her surgery as I had been for my first solo surgery during residency. I wanted it to go perfectly. Feeding experts flew in from around the world to consult on her case. They assured me she was stable enough to go under, but it did nothing to ease my worry. I didn't want her to go through any more than she'd already gone through. I burned with anger every time I thought about the person who had hurt her. The police weren't any closer to finding out who'd done it than they'd been a week ago, but I refused to entertain the possibility that they wouldn't find the person who had hurt her. Someone had to be punished. Janie was clutching her favorite dinosaur to her chest when I came into the pre-operating room. She gave me a big smile when I walked in, recognizing me even in all of my surgical gear. She had a gap-toothed smile now. They had removed her rotten tooth in front a few days ago.
Dr. Chris!
Her face lit up. Hey, sweetie, I see you brought Fred. I leaned over and planted a kiss on her forehead. Normally, I wouldn't think about kissing a patient on the forehead, but none of the regular rules applied to Janie.
I want to keep Fred.
She hugged him close to her chest.
Of course Fred can come.
I jiggled one of his arms dramatically. I think he has a broken arm, too. We have to do something about this. She giggled. It was the first time I'd made her giggle, and my heart melted.
Do you have any more questions for me?
I asked, even though it had been less than 12 hours since we'd been through it. She shook her head, holding Fred just as tightly. I planted another kiss on the top of her head.
You're going to do great. I'll see you in a little bit.
I'd never performed surgery with an audience, but the adjacent room was filled with residents and interns. It went better than I'd expected. She tolerated the anesthesia, and the break to her elbow was clean, without any of the splintering I'd been nervous about. I reset it the way it should have been done the first time. I fused and grafted the four places where her muscles and tendons had calcified together. It was over before I knew it, and they were wheeling her into the recovery room. I wrapped Fred's arm in a matching purple cast and brought him with me into recovery. I leaned over her bed and placed my hand on her forehead. Her eyelids fluttered as she struggled to wake up.
Look who I brought.
I held him up so she could see him better. She was still disoriented from the anesthesia. A smile slowly spread across her face. She grabbed him and brought him to her face.
See? He had surgery just like you. I made his cast just like yours, so you guys match.
Another hazy smile. Her eyes looked funny. Her body heaved, and yellow liquid spurted from her mouth. I grabbed the green basin and quickly sat her up. I held her while she dry-heaved into it. There was nothing in her stomach, since she hadn't been able to eat anything the night before surgery.
It's okay, sweetie. It's just the medicine making you sick.
I took off her soiled gown and covered her up with a fresh new blanket. I rubbed her arm softly.
You're doing great, sweetheart. Just great.
She closed her eyes and drifted back to sleep. She opened her eyes every so often to make sure I was still there. Normally, the nurses sat with kids in the recovery room, but I wanted her to have a familiar face looking back at her when she woke. I pulled a chair next to her and propped my legs up on the end of her bed. She looked so peaceful, lost in her world of dreams. Stillness enveloped her, and Janie was never still. She moved constantly, always fidgeting. It was so nice to see her at rest, even if it was from the drugs coursing through her system. I couldn't pull myself away from her. I closed my eyes, and it wasn't long before I fell asleep beside her.
5. Hannah Bauer. Where was Christopher? And what was taking him so long? He was the one who'd booked the dinner reservation and sent it to all our calendars, so there was no way he'd forgotten about it. I glanced at my watch for the third time in 10 minutes. It was so unlike him to be late and not let me know something had come up. I'd already pictured him in a car accident on Highway 12 more than once. My sister, Allison, reached over and poured me a glass of wine, fingernails perfectly manicured, glowing pink. I didn't know how she found the time to get them done with how busy she was. Don't worry, he'll be here soon. Of course, Christopher's tardiness wasn't a big deal to her because her husband, Greg, was always late. Whenever Christopher and I needed them to be somewhere at a specific time, we told them it was 30 minutes earlier than it was, and even then, they still managed to be late sometimes. In fact, Christopher was so late tonight that Greg was already here. Greg was uncomfortable being at dinner with just Allison and me, though he wasn't doing or saying anything to let on that he felt that way. Allison had told me he'd said that being alone with us was like being the awkward third wheel on a date. He was right. It was hard for anyone to get a word in when the two of us got going, but that was what happened when you grew up only 11 months apart. We were more like twins than sisters.
Should I try to get a hold of him?
Greg asked, rubbing his chin. He had a scruffy layer of light facial hair all the time, never clean-shaven and never a full beard. He directed his question at Allison like he needed her permission more than mine. Allison flicked her hair over her shoulders and rolled her eyes dramatically. He's not ignoring her because he's mad. Not like someone I know.
Like I'm the only one who uses that tactic, he snapped back.
They had no problem fighting in public, and I'd told her how uncomfortable it made me, but she never listened. Christopher rushed up to our table right before they stepped into a full-fledged argument. I breathed a sigh of relief, both to see his face and because I wasn't going to have to listen to Allison and Greg fight.
I'm so sorry I'm late.
He bent to kiss me, and I turned my head so it landed on my cheek instead of my lips, my worry instantly replaced with annoyance.
It's totally fine, Greg said.
He pointed to the full drink in front of Christopher's place setting.
I took care of you.
Christopher laughed and slid into his chair. Thanks. So where were you? I asked, not willing to let him slide that easily.
I fell asleep after Janie's surgery, he said.
You fell asleep after her surgery?
I know, right? Pretty unbelievable. I don't even know how it happened. One minute I was sitting next to her bed watching her sleep, and the next second I was out.
He reached underneath the table and squeezed my knee.
Don't be mad.
Allison reached across and slapped my hand. She's not going to be mad. We don't get to see you guys enough for her to get mad and ruin our night. Fine, but only because she's got a point. For the record, I'm still mad at you. I stuck my tongue out at him. How'd her surgery go? Allison asked. Even though we couldn't see each other as much as we wanted, Allison and I texted constantly so that we stayed current with whatever was going on in the other's life. I'd been filling her in all week with the details of Janie's case as they came forth. Initially, police investigators had thought she was a neglected toddler, but the wounds on her body told a more painful story. The marks on her neck and wrists were consistent with being tied up, which elevated her case to another level of severity, as if it weren't already bad enough. Allison was obsessed with finding the person responsible. She scoured missing children databases and even had Google alerts set up on her phone, notifying her when a new missing child case occurred. It reminded me of what she'd been like in law school. Sometimes I thought she missed it, though she'd never admit it, since she swore staying at home with her boys was the best job she'd ever had.
Everything went smoothly. Perfect, really.
Christopher beamed.
I'd gone over her x-rays so many times, it was like taking my boards.
How'd the fusions go? I asked. They were the part he'd been most worried about. He'd pored over those scans for hours.
Better than I could have expected. Some of it was impossible to cut through because her bones are so small. It was like working on a model. I'm glad that part is over with. Now we just hope she heals okay.
He took another drink.
You're never going to guess what we found out.
He looked around the table, making brief eye contact with each of us. Janie isn't a toddler. She's actually 6 years old.
What? Allison said. Seriously?
How do you know that? I asked.
No one has ever been sure about her age. Dan thought it'd be a perfect opportunity to measure all the gaps between her growth plates while she was under, so we did. Every single one. Turns out she's 6 years old.
Wow. How does that change things for her care? I asked.
It's going to be interesting. The progression of a...
Allison interrupted him.
Okay, this is where I'm stopping the conversation because I know you're about one step away from getting all medical on us. No more work talk tonight. Seriously. Just fun from now on.
I laughed and grabbed my glass, raising it to hers. If anyone needed a night out, it was Allison. We'd been raised like twins, but Allison had actual twins. Caleb and Dylan were my 9-year-old nephews and kept her busier than any full-time job I'd ever had.
I'm so glad Janie's surgery went well, I said to Christopher later that evening as we turned down our comforter and climbed into bed. Now maybe you'll be able to relax a little.
He'd been so tense all week. He'd spent all of his free time studying her case. He'd fallen asleep with his notes on his nightstand, the last thing he'd looked at before bed.
I don't know, but it's weird. I'm actually more committed to her than I was before.
He pulled me close, and I snuggled against his chest. I loved when we got to go to sleep with each other at night. It was the best part of the weekend.
Like, I'm kind of bummed that I don't get to do more for her.
I'd felt the same way with my first child abuse case. You never forgot your first. Mine was a 10-year-old boy brought in by his mother with a bloodied and broken nose. His mother had kept trying to convince us that he'd fallen, but something about his demeanor had sparked everyone's suspicions. We'd kept him in the hospital until the social worker could talk to him, and he'd finally confessed that his stepfather had punched him in the face after the boy had accidentally spilled his beer. For weeks, I'd thought of excuses to call him so I could check on him until my supervisor made me stop. I didn't have any choice but to let it go. It would probably take Christopher even longer to let go of Janie.
It's not like she'll be going anywhere anytime soon, and you'll still have to follow up with her post-operative care, I said, rubbing his arm.
I just wish there were more for me to do. But so much of her care is centered on her eating issues. There's nothing I can do there.
He shook his head in frustration. Nothing.
How's the oven timer working? I asked.
One of her nurses had brought in an old-fashioned oven timer so Janie would have an idea when she could eat again. The idea was to use the clock as a cue for her in hopes that it would calm her.
She watches it constantly, but I'm not sure it helps much. They put her meal times on the whiteboard, too, he said.
He was quiet. For a minute, I thought he'd fallen asleep, but then he said,
I think I'm going to stop at Target tomorrow before work and pick up some markers so people can sign her cast and she can color on it if she wants to.
Oh, that's so cute.
I scooted up and gave him a big kiss, wrapping my arms around his neck.
You're going to be a great dad. The best. I just know it. Things have been busy lately, but now that they're settling down a little, we can start looking at profiles again.
Case number 5243. Interview, Piper Goldstein. We hadn't considered Janie a reliable source of information when we thought she was three, but all that changed when we learned she was six. She broke open the case. My supervisor had finally called me back. She'd spoken with our lawyers and told